When my brother told me that our mother was rushed to the hospital, I didn't believe him. At least not until I left the university campus, went home, found it empty, and rushed to the address he gave me over the phone call. My mother was never sick. She rarely even had a reason to use meds or see the doctor. I couldn't even recall a day when she complained about a headache. Hence, being surprised and disbelieving was inevitable for me. The moment I entered the hospital, I didn't know what to expect, but my mouth lost the position to describe what my eyes saw. Not only was I speechless, but I didn't know how to react. My mother lay on the hospital bed. Her head was wrapped in bandages, her legs and hands too. She couldn't look at me with her swollen eyes and lips. I so wanted to know what happened to her and made her that way. My brother took me out of the room after a while. "What happened?" I asked him, and he was both happy and sad to narrate the story. Happy because he could finally share the burden with someone. Sad because the story affected our mother. From my brother's side of the narration, the strange happening started before my father left the house. My dad and mom haven't had the best relationship since we were young. They fought at the slightest chance, argued, and were always at loggerheads. I never thought they would last together for as long as they did. Their nothing close to smooth relationship was one of the reasons why I chose a university far from home. I didn't want to be involved with them, and I also prayed that they found peace together. It didn't mean I didn't love them. 2 years after I departed from home, I received a call from my mother, narrating how my father packed his luggage and left her alone in the house. I thought it was one of her pranks, probably because she wanted to draw me home. So I simply consoled her and told her that father would come back to her. After that call, I didn't check on her. It took another 2 weeks for me to become remorseful. My brother called and said that he'd gone home to meet mom because my dad indeed left her alone. I called my mother and apologized for my insensitivity. She accepted my apology and I ended it there. If my brother was at home with her, I had no reason to go there. I thought at the time that the reason my father left was either that my mother caught him cheating, or because he finally figured out that he couldn't cope with my mother anymore. If that was how they wanted to end their marriage, so be it. What I didn't know was that my mother and father had started to draw closer, but some strange occurrences drove him away. My brother added in his narration that just before my father left the house, twice, he reported that he left dirty plates in the kitchen. But by the time he returned to wash the plates, they were washed and cleaned and back on the shelf and in the cupboard. My mother laughed so hard at the story that my dad felt very foolish. It didn't happen to my mother because she never washed the plates. My dad always did the washing, even when they weren't each other's best. It was a simple, unspoken rule. She simply told my dad that he was probably imagining things, and he washed the plates but forgot that he did. My dad never talked about the plate issue again. If that was all there was to it, perhaps he would have remained in the house with his wife. But as time went on, my father had more things to report and complain about to my mother. The tap was running when I woke up in the middle of the night. I didn't leave the gas on, but when I tried to cook this morning, I almost got burned. The floor of the sitting room was slippery this evening and full of water. Did you spill water by chance? My father was scared, but my mother thought that he was imagining things, making things up to show her off as the careless or insensitive one. Eventually, a big fight broke out between the two of them, and my father chose to leave the house. He didn't want to sound insane and chose to make that decision for peace. That's when my brother moved in. He said that all seemed well when he started to stay with mom, but that atmosphere of peace didn't last for long. The tables turned and strange occurrences came to my mother's notice. It was worse for her. She woke up to the feeling of someone sleeping beside her. At first, she thought she missed her husband, so she said nothing about it. But then it continued. She began to hear voices in her ear, running taps, running feet, and crashing plates. Fear enveloped her, and she eventually told my brother about it. She also told him about what happened when our father was still around. My brother comforted her, but said that it could be her imagination. they decided to stop imagining bad things and live peacefully, pretending like those awful things weren't happening. And that worked for a while. But one day, out of the blue, my mother started to slap her face, scream, and jump. It became really bad, and my brother decided to take her to the hospital. The doctor gave her medicine and concluded that it was merely hallucinations. They returned home. With time, they hoped that all would be well and the imaginations would stop. But the worst came. My mother woke up early one morning, drawn by the sound of soft knocks on the door. She rushed out of her room, but first turned off the running tap in the bathroom. She was at the edge of the staircase when a voice whispered something in her ears. Hearing those words, my mother screamed so loud and slapped herself hard on the face. The motion caused her to slip and she bounced down the staircase and ended up right at the feet of my brother, who ran out of his room after hearing her scream. She lay on the ground, unconscious. That was the reason they were in the hospital, and that was the reason my brother called me. After checking on my mother and seeing that she was fine, we went back to the house. But what we saw scared us far more than all that had happened in the past few months. The house was filled with water in every corner. Broken plates littered the ground, and we could hear the running taps. We didn't need to be told to know. The house was haunted. By what or who? We would never know. Because once we packed what our hands and bags could carry, we never set foot in that house again. I should have known something was strange about the place as soon as I saw it. The peculiar stains on the carpet, the old moth-eaten curtains, the thin layer of dust over everything. But the apartment had been cheap, and I'd been desperate. And at the time, I didn't notice the smell of rot, or the feeling that something wasn't quite right. For the first few days, I was hardly in the apartment. I'd taken on as many shifts as I could at work to pay for food and bills. And when I wasn't working, I was passed out on the couch asleep. It took me a while to even bother unboxing my meager belongings. And the place never felt like home. Just a place to sleep and eat after a hard day's work. It wasn't until about a week after I'd moved in, my first day off, that I noticed things were a little strange about the place. It was the smell that bothered me first. The smell of decay. Of something rotting in the shadows. I bought a couple of cheap plugins to try and mask it, since I didn't have time to clean or find the source of the smell. It was probably just mold or damp, because the apartment was old and I'd seen water stains on the stairwell outside. But it was stronger in some areas than others, particularly where those gruesome reddish-brown stains were visible in the carpet. I did try to scrub some of them out with stain remover, but it did nothing, so I branded it a waste of time trying to clean it up. Then the scratching started. I figured a place like this probably had a rodent problem, rats in the walls. That's all it was. It didn't even bother me that much if it was rats, so long as they didn't chew through the walls or cables. Until it started to keep me awake at night. I'd be roused from the middle of sleep to the sound of scratching right beside my head. Tiny claws itching at the plasterboard on the other side of the wall, next to where I was sleeping. It would stop and start in little bursts, never straying too far away from my head. I moved the bed, nothing but a makeshift pile of blankets and pillows, really, several times. But the noises followed me around the room, almost as though they could sense I was there. Eventually, I moved my bed right into the middle of the room, where those stains had bled into the carpet. I thought that being away from the walls would mean the rats left me alone, but it only got worse. It was around 2 o'clock in the morning when I finally finished my shift and collapsed straight into bed without bothering to change out of my work clothes. I fell asleep almost immediately, as exhausted as I was. I couldn't be sure how long had passed when something woke me up. At first, I couldn't recall what it was, and lay gazing into the darkness of the room for a few seconds. Then I felt it. Something was tugging at my blankets, right where my feet were. I bolted up, fumbling for my phone to shine a light over the bed, still feeling the pressure of something pulling at the edge of the blanket. Was it a rat? Had they somehow gotten into the apartment now, too? I found my phone and switched on the flashlight function, shining it over the room. For a fraction of a second, I thought I saw a shadow slip out of sight, but it was too dark to see clearly. I pulled up all of the blankets, searching for any sign of the rodent, but there was nothing there. Had I imagined it? Maybe I thought I felt something in my half-asleep state? I shook my head, replacing the bedding and laying back down. The night had gone quiet now. I couldn't hear the rumble of cars or music pounding out of nightclubs. Even the city had fallen silent. But the rats had not. As I lay staring up at the ceiling, I heard the ch-ch-ch of nails. Only this time it was coming from beneath me. Beneath the stained carpet, beneath the floorboards, directly beneath my head. If I really concentrated, I thought I could feel it too, the vibrations running through the foundations. I tried to ignore it and fall back asleep, but the feeling of something tugging at my blankets was still weighing on my mind, and I was starting to wonder if it was a rat at all. I curled up my knees so that my feet weren't near the edge of the blanket, and finally drifted off. Things continued like this for the next few days, and I was starting to get more and more fatigued between the brutal work shifts and my sleepless nights. I decided to ditch the bed and sleep on the couch instead. It was in the room across the hall, opposite a small television that hardly had signal most of the time. One night, about 2 weeks after I'd moved there, I was sleeping on the couch when the television turned on by itself. I woke up, bleary and confused, to the room filled with static. Ahead of me, the TV screen was nothing but a grainy black-and-white picture. Fumbling for the remote, I switched it off and tried to figure out why it had turned on. Some kind of power reset? I couldn't have touched the remote by accident in my sleep since it was on the floor, nowhere near the couch. I tried not to worry about it and was almost drifting off when I felt a shift in the air. It's hard to describe, but it almost felt like I wasn't alone all of a sudden. The shadows seemed too thick, the air felt too still, and a crippling sense of unease began to fill my stomach. I chalked it down to being overworked and exhausted, telling myself it was nothing. I closed my eyes, pulled the covers up to my chin, then jerked awake with a start, my eyes wide. Something had touched my cheek, a breath or a whisper, I couldn't tell, but I had felt it, like a cold breeze on my skin. I searched frantically through the darkness of the room for any signs of an intruder, but saw nothing. When I'd finally regained my composure, I got up and switched on the main light. I jumped to my feet, switching on the light. The bulb had no lampshade, hanging loose from the ceiling, but it provided enough illumination to see the room was empty. I knew I hadn't imagined it, but I couldn't rationalize it either. I spent the rest of the night searching the apartment. But I was the only one there. Which meant there was only one explanation. The apartment was haunted. I spent the next few days asking around, trying to gather as much information as I could about the apartment, until my search led me to the local library. I found the articles in the library's archive. After typing in my apartment's address, a flood of them appeared on the screen. As I scanned the headlines, it quickly became apparent that I was right. There were news reports dating back to 2013, all the way up to this year. Gruesome murder in downtown apartment. Unsolved murder shakes apartment residents. The tragic death of an unfortunate woman. Residents claim apartment to be haunted by unsolved murder victim. I'd read enough to know that the apartment had a sordid history, and that the past had yet to be put to rest. I also knew that I had too much on my plate to deal with anything beyond the living. So I ended up moving out shortly afterwards, before things could get any worse.
Jeffrey bought our new house when I was 4 months pregnant, and it was simply the most thoughtful thing anyone had ever done for me. The construction of the building was unamusing but assuring. It was a small house, smaller than our old apartment at the center of town, but what it lacked in grandness, it compensated for in spirit. We had our own influence over it, Or so we thought. We had so much love in the house that we made so much love for the first month of our stay. All three bedrooms of the room were a small universe, and we applied it to the most passionate of our desires. It was the reason Jeffrey and I had bought the house anyway. The fact that it was cheap on the market may have been a bonus. The house in its state would have cost us 3 times more on the market, but we loved our home for that, until strange things began to happen. Our first occurrence was a bestial cry, deep in the middle of the night. It was a cry so urgent and so personal that it tore into my sleep. I roused with a slumbering laziness on my bed, careful with my bump, even as this aching cry snatched sleep from my eyes at such an odd hour. I think something's in the house, Jeffrey said to me when he saw that I was awake. I could not believe my ears, and my heart was beating rapidly. What do you mean something is in the house? I queried with a look of puzzlement. Jeffrey bleached white, and I sensed that he was afraid at that moment. I was too. Such a cry was unusual, echoing through the halls of the house. Jeffrey sat up on the bed and reached his hands across the sheets. A moment later, my hand was in my husband's. What do you think it is? I asked, incapable of deciphering if it was a man or animal. Huh? Jeffrey gasped. I swallowed. What do you think the crying is? I don't know, Jeffrey said. I stared into his eyes, and I could sense the sincerity of his confession. The unwillingness to investigate also baffled me. His quivering fingers twitched against the back of his palm, seeking warmth in my grip. He was so panicky. His hands sweated into mine. Fuck this, Jeremy. I cussed in frustration and slipped sideways and tried to tremble out of the bed. My heart was in a beating frenzy, shaking the muscles across my chest, but I knew I couldn't afford to stay put while my own horror consumed me. Where are you going? Jeffrey asked me. His face was so bleached pale that one would assume that he had been drained of blood. I wonder how long he had been up before I was awake. The crying continued, reading the night with its bleak tune. Please come back to bed. I'll call the cops, Jeffrey begged. I stopped in my stride and turned around to stare at him. And in that instance, the noise died down. The muffled cry was a singular repetition, rising and falling. The silence that followed was even scarier than the crying. We stayed up all night till the cops came in the morning. The house was haunted, they reported to us, and it was out of their own jurisdiction to handle such things, except that they had to break it down. 3 of the last 4 families to stay in the house lost a family member. Nobody knew what it was, but the house was haunted, and the paranormal detectives could not tell what it was, because they could not sense the spirits. We thanked them for their service, and the cops left after an hour. Jeffrey and I were left in the haunted house with 2 options. I knew we couldn't afford to leave. Even if we could, it would be on such a short notice. So we took the latter option. We decided to stay in the house. All through the day, we carried on with our activities and chores in solemn silence. The atmosphere was heavy with mortal dread, and neither of us went out of our view for a long time. The swinging mood from our intense love to doleful sobriety made me very alert, and if I was afraid, I knew I could not show it. Not when Jeffrey was as afraid as he was. We stayed in this state of mind without anything out of the ordinary happening. Then it was night again, and the crying returned. On its return, it introduced depth into Jeffrey's anxiety. His face wasn't so white as his skin, but it was splotched and dotted unevenly as his fears. I should call the cops, he muttered at first, then decided against it because the cops only shown up at dawn. I should probably go check on it myself. He sighed, mustering bravery once the sound graduated from a cry to a stomping foot march around the house. I'll go with you, I said to him as he turned to me with a glazed pair of eyes. His fear had become palpable, a heightened emotion I could not access for some reason, even though I was afraid myself. No, he muttered, then turned the hinge of the door. A putrid odor contaminated the air once the door was open, and it sailed in my direction with compulsion. I knew something was in the house, but at that moment, it was certain. I realized the danger that we were in. The moment between my realization and the moment it sensed us was a flash. All I heard was something swooshing in our room forcefully and latching onto Jeffrey. Hungry. The hunchback brute with hair all over its body cried in a familiar tune. Meat! He roared. I blinked, but he had already sunk his teeth into Jeffrey's arm. His tough, muscular body made him impossible to shake off. The fact that Jeffrey and I were both paralyzed with fear at the instant of what we saw made it worse. Jeffrey! I screamed when I saw this nameless beast taking my husband apart before me. His attacks were unrelenting and savage in intensity. I unraveled in the moment of my utter terror and acted out of sheer impulse. I hurried to the side of the bed and I fetched the glass lamp with agile movement. The nameless beast was so taken by his onslaught on Jeffrey, who was succumbing to his beatings, that when I came from behind, he didn't even stir. I placed two hands on the handle of the lamp and swung it as hard as I could on his head. I could not say what sound I was expecting from such a violent thwack, but the beast's head did not crack. The sound was a dull thud that one would hear from a packet hitting the floor. The beast fell off Jeffrey and onto the floor, knocked out unconscious. Call the cops now, Jeffrey said to me, and I did as I was told. The cops arrived half an hour later to take away the horror of our lives. Our home was once again ours, and we watched them take away this strange-looking beast.
The time was a few minutes past 7 a.m. Something was gnawing at me. It was a distant memory trapped somewhere in the recess of my mind. I wanted to think and recall what it was, but the movie playing on the screen was more interesting. It's not another horror movie, is it? Jake, my younger brother, asked. Looks like it, I told him with a smirk. He groaned. On the TV screen, a dog was pawing wildly at the soil. His owner, a boy of just over 10 years, sat on the porch watching his dog dig frantically, like it was desperate to get to something buried in the ground. Rocky, he called. What are you doing? The dog, Rocky, kept digging. Rocky, the boy called again. If Rocky heard, he didn't give any sign that he had. He just kept digging. Intrigued, the boy came off the porch and walked down to the spot where the dog was working the soil loose. He hunkered down just in front of him. What are you looking for, boy? He asked. The dog stopped then and looked up at him. It was then that he noticed something in the soil. It was something dull white, just a little brown in some places because of the dirt. Is that? The boy reached for it and then withdrew his hands. He turned to look at his dog. The dog barked at him. The boy started to dig too, moving the soil away from around whatever was in the ground. As it was more exposed, it gradually became clear what it was. A skull. The boy pulled it loose and held it up to look at it. Just beneath it, the sound of glass panes vibrating rose into the air. It graduated to a heavy rumbling. An eerie blue light came to life within the skull. The boy threw it away and scrambled backward, Behind him, the ground burst open and a skeletal hand thrust into the air. "Go check who it is," I told Jake. "Mm-mm." He shook his head in a vigorous refusal. Somehow he had gotten it into his head that the ghosts from the other horror movies we'd been binging on since morning were lurking in different corners of the house and waiting to get him alone. I sighed and rose to get to the door. To my amusement, he followed me down the hallway to the threshold. The house key was in the lock, so I twisted it right to unlock the door and pulled the knob. The door swung back to reveal my father looking angrier than I'd ever seen him. We'd not heard him drive in, and that seemed to displease him quite a bit. "Why the hell is the backyard still untouched?" he asked. I pulled back, scratching my head. "What?" He took a step forward. He had asked Jake and me to clear the weeds which had overgrown the yard. We'd just moved into this new place, and it seemed that the old owners had cared too little for it in the days that preceded its sale to my father. Now, unfortunately, it fell to Jake and me to do the work they should have done. "I'm sorry, Dad," I said. "We forgot." He sneered. "You forgot? I bet you were in front of that darn TV all day and night, doing nothing." "We'll do it tomorrow," I assured him. "First thing." He shook his head no. "You will do it now, both of you." "Now?" "Now." The note of finality in his voice booked no argument. I had lived around this man for 20 years. That was long enough to understand his moods. Somebody had probably pissed him off at work. Now he was going to transfer his aggression to Jake and me. "What are you waiting for?" he asked. "Jump to it." Beside me, Jake shrank back. It was just 11, still young enough to be scared easily. I, on the other hand, had outgrown that stage. All his displeasure ever provoked in me these days was anger and the yearning for true independence. Unfortunately, I'd never get that until I got a well-paying job. Until then, I'd have to do whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. "Come on, Jake," I said, and went round my father. The lawnmower and other tools were in the garage. Dad was yet to set up his dream tool shed in the backyard. I grabbed the lawnmower. "Get that digger, Jake." "What's it for?" he asked. "Stumps," I told him. "For the stubborn shrubs." He picked it up and followed me out of the house. I turned on the mower and started to cut down the weeds in earnest. The shrubs which lined the side of the house would come later. Jake sat and watched as I mowed the grass. When I was done, I took the digger from him and started to uproot the shrubs. It was as I dug up the second shrub that I hit something hard. I stopped and checked to see what rock had lodged itself beneath the plant. But it wasn't a rock. "What's that?" Jake asked. I didn't need to dig it up to know what it was. One of the empty eye sockets was above the ground, staring sightlessly at nothing. "What's that?" Jake asked again. "A skull," I told him.
"Jesus Christ!" he scrambled away. "What's it doing here? Somebody died here? Ghosts!"
"Jake, will you chill for goodness sake?" I snapped.
"It's just a skull. There's no ghost."
"Where there are dead people, there always be ghosts," he countered. "You saw it in the movie." I scoffed. "It's just a movie, silly, not reality." That didn't convince him, so I went to the extreme. "I'll just pull this thing out so you'll see it's nothing."
"No, Jake."
There was a moment of silence in which our wills clashed. After a brief battle, mine prevailed. Jake sighed. "It's dangerous." I hooked a finger in the empty socket and pulled. The skull didn't even budge. Suddenly, I felt a tremor beneath me, and the glass panes of the house windows started to vibrate loudly. "What's that?" Jake asked. He rose to his feet and began to back away.
"They're coming! Oh no!"
"Nobody is coming, Jake," I told him. But I didn't pull at the skull again. Rather, I rose to my feet to inspect the window. The glass panes were vibrating. Quickly, I ran into the house to inspect. Funnily enough, the room closest to the backyard was mine. I scoffed and went into the room to inspect. The window panes were vibrating here, and there was no one in the room. I went closer and touched them. The floor shook suddenly, and a distant boom rocked my psyche. I jumped away from the window, startled. Jake's voice floated to my ears from somewhere in the house.
"Ghosts! Dad, a ghost is in the house!
I backed out of the room quickly, but the tremors in the floor followed me out of the room.
Oh God, I wondered, what is happening? Dad!
Jake screamed again.
Stay away from the window, there's a ghost outside! Its skull is—
Shut up, you silly twit! Dad snapped. I followed their voices into the living room and found Dad standing by the window with his hand on the panes. Jake was sitting on the sofa with his hands folded tightly around himself.
It's just an earthquake, Dad announced. It's my first month in this town, and the godforsaken earthquake couldn't even wait.
Even though I hated how he spat the words at my brother, they brought me relief. I sat next to Jake and pulled him into my arms. It's just an earthquake, like he said, I told him. Just give it a minute, it'll pass. The tremors stopped then, and everything became still. Now it was my turn to tell Dad something he didn't like. There's a skull in your backyard, by the way, I said. I just thought you should know.